helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Most of us are probably familiar with at least one variation of this quote from 1 Timothy chapter 6. The use of money to coerce, cajole, and outright bribe the American people into complying with the whims of government is a perennial topic here at the Constitution Study. No matter how often we bring it up, though, it seems the American people are more than eager to be led into all kinds of evil as long as there's a promise of money attached. Today, I want to look at some more recent examples, not only of the greediness our love of money exhibits, but the sorrows we have pierced ourselves with. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. Yes, I will talk about the love of money, but there's an event that broke recently that I want to spend a little bit of time on before we get started, and that is the recent shooting of by ATF of a gentleman, the Brian Malinowski. I think I got that right. He was known as, I guess, he was a director of the Little Rock Airport. Now, so far, there's a lot of information we do not know, so I don't want to speculate too far. Here's what I know I'm pretty sure, based on the evidence I've seen. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, also known as ATF, tried to serve a search warrant on this gentleman, Mr. Malinowski, at his home at 6 a.m. on, I think it was Tuesday, March 19th, I believe is the date they tried to serve it. Mr. Malinowski had a firearm and shot at the police, and the police shot at him. The details of who shot first, how this was initiated, in other words, did the police break in? Did they knock at the door? Did they properly announce? And all this, all to serve a search warrant, not an arrest warrant, ladies and gentlemen, a search warrant. They alleged to have evidence that Mr. Malinowski was acting as a firearm dealer without a federal firearm license. Yeah, that's it. Not a drug mule, not a serial murderer. And it looks like the primary basis of probable cause from the affidavit that was attached to the search warrant was that he bought a bunch of guns, that they believe he purchased approximately 92 firearms between November of 2021 and December of 2023. So a little over 2 years he purchased 92 firearms. And for that, they got a warrant. Okay. I haven't been through the whole affidavit of the warrant, so I'm not sure how strong the probable cause is, but they had a warrant. I want to know how this went down. Now, at this point, I'm not ready to believe anything yet. Right? I don't see any evidence. ATF has had a history lately of, we'll say, being overly aggressive in trying to serve such warrants. So it would be reasonable to believe that maybe ATF came in up armed rather intrusive for, again, a simple search warrant. They wanted to search his home. Why do you show up at 6 o'clock in the morning? Maybe because you want to catch him before he goes to work. Okay. Why not contact him or his attorney? I don't know. This doesn't appear to be an accusation of a violent criminal. This is a process crime. In fact, I don't even know if it rises to a felony, but that's what I know so far. I will keep an eye on this and let you know as Information continues to roll in, and I try to get to spend more time with the search warrant itself and its affidavit, and see if I can glean a little more information out, both because of time and a little research. Okay, so let's get into this, the question of the love of money. And, you know, love of money makes us do a lot of crazy things, a lot of, I would say, stupid things. And, well, I'm sorry, but you can't get much more stupid than, well, President Biden.
I cut the national debt by $1.7 trillion.
We literally cut the federal debt in half by $1.4 trillion.
$1.7 trillion. $1.7 trillion cut.
We cut the debt by $1.7 billion in the last 2 years.
Let me say that again. $1.7 trillion.
I reduced the budget by $1.7 billion. Okay? I reduced the debt.
We cut the federal debt in half. Fact.
In the first 2 years of my administration, I cut the debt by $1.7
trillion. $1.7
billion. $1.7 trillion. $1.7
trillion. $1.7
trillion.
$7
billion.
$1.7 trillion. $1.7 billion. It's a trillion dollars. Not billion, $1 trillion.
$1.7 trillion. Hear me?
No one's ever reduced the debt that much.
You know, there is one thing that Biden said in that litany that was correct. No one has ever cut the debt by that much. Not even you, Mr. Biden. It's not that hard. I went to Investopedia, get that right. And I said, hey, what has been the national debt by year? And they go all the way back to, where do they start this off? They go all the way back to 1929, when our national debt was $17 billion. And that was during the market crash. So let's take a look. Now, Joe Biden took office in January of 2021, and the national debt was $28,428,000,000. In 2020, that, by the way, that was after the passing passing of the American Rescue Plan Act. In 2022, we had the Inflation Reduction Act. The national debt was $30,928,000,000,000. And so far in 2023, the national debt was $33,167,000,000,000. I don't know if you need an abacus or just to count on your fingers, but at no time has the debt gone down. And in fact, going all the way back to the market crash in 1929, at no time has the debt ever gone down. Now, what Biden should have been saying was he cut the national deficit. And that's one of those, yeah, no. Well, technically, yes. Because during COVID, we had a bunch of special spending, and you know the federal government, the Congress decided to simply throw money at everything. We'll just throw, you know, we'll shut everybody down, we'll put them out of work, and then we'll throw money at them. So we had this ridiculous deficit. I mean, the debt in 2019 was $22,700,000,000. In 2020, it was $26,900,000,000. And I subtracted debt from, say, 2019, $22 trillion. We basically got $4.2 trillion deficit in 2020. We had to borrow $4.2 trillion. Now, Biden comes along, and we, after all that ridiculous spending, the deficit in 2021 was $2.5 trillion. And if you do a little math, you'll find that if you take $4.2 trillion and you subtract the $2.5 trillion, as you take the deficit in 2020 of 4.2, you subtract the deficit of $2.5 trillion in 2021, guess what? You have a $1.7 trillion decrease, which is where he comes up this money, but it wasn't off the debt. The debt never went down. It was the deficit. And that's the deficit, not off of our normal process. That was the deficit after the ridiculous overspending of the Trump administration to deal with the way they messed up COVID. Right? It's COVID didn't cause it. It's the way government dealt with it. But then he turned around at one point, did you hear, he said, we cut the budget 1.7. That's not true, because the money that was borrowed under the Trump administration. Remember, Congress borrows the money. Congress authorizes the borrowing of money. Congress spends the money. That was not part of the budget. That was extra budgetary because we had this scamdemic. So the whole thing is a lie, an attempt to make it look like that Joe Biden is fiscally responsible. When we look at the actual numbers, in other words, we set aside the rhetoric, we look at the details, he raised the debt, or I should say the debt was raised while he was in office. All right, let me be honest with you. He didn't raise the debt, he didn't lower the debt, because the president can't do that. It's Congress. Right? So that's line number one. Line number two, under his administration, at the end of 2021, there was a $2.2 trillion deficit. At the end of 2022, there was a $2.5 trillion deficit. At the end of 2022, there was a $2.2 trillion deficit. So far, while he has been in office, there has been a $4.7 trillion increase in our debt, not a $1.7 trillion decrease. We all set with that. I bring that up because, one, large numbers tend to confuse people. But let's face it, what Biden was saying was a flat out lie. Now, I can understand, maybe there are examples where he says, no, it was not the debt that we lowered, it was the deficits that we lowered. Okay, that's still a lie, because the only deficit he came down from was, again, COVID. So if we take that COVID year out of the question, right, 2020, even into 2021, right? Let's take both of those out. 2020, 2021, we're going to take them out because both of them involve COVID spending. Yes, there was other spending. Let's take those out. So the first deficit, the first year of the deficit under the Biden administration is 2022, and we were dealing with a $2.5 trillion deficit. We go back to 2019, and you know what the deficit was? $1.2 trillion. That's like saying, you know, oh, okay, I won the lottery and I got $1 million in the lottery, and then the next year I just had my salary of $100,000, so I cut my income by $900,000. That's the craziness. That's the nonsense. And that, again, that's what money leads us to do. It leads us to find ways to justify our greed, our unwillingness to deal with finances rationally, logically. There's a lot there, but it also leads into a lot of other things. And I want to get into them, but I've got a break coming up. So let's deal with the break first, and then we'll come back and talk about some more of these examples of the evil that we inflict on ourselves by our love of the almighty dollar. Now, before I go, let me ask you a couple things. First of all, do you have a question? So I love answering questions, and I want to do a whole Q&A segment, but I need more questions. So do me a favor, go to the website, constitutionstudy.com. You can find all the work that we're doing there. And if you look around, you should find an ask a question button. You fill out a simple form and, you know, basically your name, your email address, and the question. There's a little checkbox that says, please answer this on the radio. You do that, and I'll be more than happy to add you to that Q&A list and answer your question on the radio. And before you think, well, you know, Paul, it's just, this is a stupid question. I don't believe in stupid questions. If you don't know, please ask. The only thing I ask you to do is, if you ask, listen to the answer. You know, don't ask a question and then ignore the answer. So again, constitutionstudy.com/questions, or just click the button, ask a question. And I'm looking for these questions to answer. Now, the other thing is, if you're talking about, we're talking obviously about money. And we want to be smart with our money, which means not only how we handle our money to make sure we keep as much of it as possible, but where we spend our money. I'm going to ask you, if you're tired of spending your money with companies that hate your rights, that are trying to destroy our way of life, well then, consider this. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They offer the best 4G and 5G coverage across all the networks on all the same towers as our major carriers. So you can find a solution that covers you well, and you can do it at a price that fits any budget. Their customer support is 100% U.S.-based, and I've been so happy with them. They're almost like, it's like a Chick-fil-A drive-thru. In fact, let me tell you a quick story. I was looking to make a change on the networks that I use, and I had to wait. The service wasn't available yet. I bumped into, they had a table set up at an event I was at, and I happened to ask them if the service I was asking for was available yet. They said, it's not quite announced yet, but it should be shortly. Well, I get back to my hotel room. I've got an email saying, we've ordered you the new cars for the new service. We've already shipped them. And then an email from an individual saying, we've done this. You should have the cards in a couple of days. When you do, call me personally and we'll take care of this. And by the time I got home, I had everything I needed. I contacted that person and I got that day we had it fixed. That's customer service that I like, and that's customer service I think you'll like as well. Now, please check out Patriot Mobile. Go to patriotmobile.com/constitution. You'll find a plan that works for you. If you need a new phone, you can buy one there as well. But if you use the code Constitution when you check out, you'll also get free activation. So for all these reasons, to support industries and companies that support our rights, the right to life, the constitutionally protected rights, use Patriot Mobile today. Use that code, promo code Constitution, when you check out to get free activation. And I know I love their service. I believe you will as well.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, and today we're talking about the root of all kinds of evil. If you know anything about the Bible, you're pretty sure that you understand that the money, the love of money, I should say, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And boy, we do love our money. You can see it, and there's, granted, we see it over time, but the latest attempt by the Biden administration to bribe young people by offering to pay off their student loans. Of course, he's not offering to pay off their student loans. He's offering to have you pay off their student loans. What I find interesting is, and again, we're going to go back to Alexis de Tocqueville and his famous line, the Republic will continue until Congress realizes it can bribe the public with the public's money. That's a pretty close paraphrase. Right, so the idea of we can bribe the public with the public's money. So you go back to the idea, hey, you know what? I was under Obama. They said, you know, banks are making money at this. We don't like the way banks are dealing with student loans. So the federal government's going to get involved. Forget the fact that it's unconstitutional. We'll do it because it can be used to manipulate people. Not simply the fact that there's money. Guess what? You're a college. You're a university, and you want to get students to have student loans. Well, if the student loans place certain requirements on the places where it can be used, you're going to influence the college and university. And of course, then again, colleges and universities said, hey, look, we've got all these students that now can get these massive loans with little, if any, difficulty. How about we start throwing money at the college and university? We can hike up our tuitions. And rather than focusing on academics, we'll focus on meal plans, on food halls, right? Where you go to get your... When I was in college, granted, I spent 1 year in college way back in the early 80s. Basically, college food was cafeteria food, right? It looked a little different than what I used to get in a public high school. I visited a college several years ago. I used to, my IT career, I dealt with a lot of college universities. We had lunch in a place, they in their food hall. Okay, it was still kind of cafeteria style in that you went up and got what you want. What do they call them? You go to the mall and the food court. That was it. It's more like a food court. You had all these different choices. Some of them were very simple and plain. Some of them were fairly high end. They focused on that. And now people borrowed money that they probably couldn't afford. And then what happens? Well, the federal government says, we'll come in and we'll pay it for you. They're not paying for it. It's actually the American taxpayer that's paying for it. But again, money led to, in large part, ridiculous increase in tuition, making college less and less affordable unless you got the loan from the government, which now the government wants to pay off as a bribe to the American people. Ladies and gentlemen, this is not the first time that Congress did this. Anybody remember the housing crash? When Congress said, you know what, everybody should own their own home. It's practically an unalienable right. So we're going to force banks to loan money to people with insufficient credit. We're going to do less investigations. We'll just, you write the loan, we'll take it over and we'll take all the risk. And when the housing market crashed, because guess what? People who couldn't afford their homes started not affording their homes. They stopped paying the mortgage. What did the federal government do? They turned around and went to the banks that got hit and said, hey, we'll bail you out. Again, these are examples where we have literally pierced ourselves with all forms of sorrow because our love of money has led us to greed, it led us away from truth and fairness and justice, and it was just greed. There's another example. How many people remember the Inflation Reduction Act? Yeah, one of the more poorly named things. It really should be the Green Fleecing of the American People Act. Well, one of the things in that act that most people didn't know about because it was ginormous and nobody actually read it was that there was a greenhouse gas reduction fund set up. It got roughly $27 billion. That's right, with a B, $27 billion. In order to give grants to quote unquote reduce greenhouse gases. It was a $27 billion scam. Nothing else. It's a slush fund. It was a way to put money aside to give to special interest groups, climate activists, political interests that could in any way, shape, or form be considered climate. So now, guess what? Congress, 2 years later, has a bill that they want to pass. It's in the House at the moment. It's called the Cutting Green Corruption and Taxes Act. I just love these names. These are driving nuts. And basically, they want to defund the slush fund. That's, well, at least the Republicans in the House, that's what they're saying is to eliminate the waste and fraud. $27 billion of waste that this slush fund set up. Now, you may have noticed, right, it's the Cutting Green Corruption and Taxes Act, because that same Inflation Reduction Act placed a tax on natural gas. Now, again, natural gas is the less polluted. It's a less polluting form of petroleum. You know, it's often found with oil. And it's a cleaner process. But you see, the climate extremists, we'll call them, I'll be kind, climate extremists, they hate petroleum. And they're doing everything they can to, to prevent, make it harder for you to buy petroleum products. So rather than saying, all right, they want to get to electric vehicles. We don't have the infrastructure for electric vehicles. We don't have the power generation for electric vehicles. Electric vehicles don't work in all situations in this country. So how about we say, let's, as we're getting from where we are now to where you want to be, an interim step might be, how about we, if you hate gasoline, how about we do natural gas? It's less polluting. No, the activists come along and say, no, we have to make natural gas less affordable and therefore less reliable. And in the middle of all this, this, I don't want to say ferve, this obsession that somehow green energy is going to save us. And of course, that leads us to another green energy evil. And that is the toxicity of solar panels. Not only is it damaging to the environment to mine the minerals needed for them, what's inside a solar panel needs to be properly disposed of. And Texas is dealing with that problem right now. See, back on March 16th, there was a hailstorm, huge hailstorm. It went through Fort Bend County, Texas, that happened to go across the Fighting Jays solar farm. A 3,300-acre span of land covered with solar panels designed or supposed to power 60,000 homes. But there's a problem. See, when the hailstorm went through, it destroyed a bunch of these solar panels. So there, you know, the glass fronts or the polycarbonate, whatever they use on the front of them, is damaged, is broken. It's okay. Well, we can replace those. That happens. Yet the problem is, so chemicals, toxins from these panels can leak into well water. And now they've got hazmat teams. They'll say, so far they've said there's been no contamination so far, but They've got to deal with this problem before they start leaking into the groundwater, which would be pretty bad. You said, Paul, what does this have to do with the love of money? Well, you have these solar activists begging, pleading for billions and billions of dollars to set these things up. And we set them up and, you know, voila, we've got potential toxic leakage due to a hailstorm. Granted, big hailstorm, but due to a hailstorm. And this is just what, just over a year after Texas, what was a year or 2 years? Texas had blackouts because their wind turbines were not designed to deal with a freak cold front that went through, and they didn't work, and there were issues with the natural gas that was supposed to back them up, and they had these ginormous blackouts. Again, I'm not saying that I don't want clean energy. I'd love clean energy. But you have to deal with reality to a certain extent. There's the technology that we have today, and there's technology we hope to develop for the future. But as long as money becomes a part of it, as long as these energy companies, these environmental companies can get billions of dollars, as long as these scientists can get multi-million dollar grants to write papers that basically prove what the government wants them to prove so that the government can justify spending money on these programs, you see these evils. How do we deal with it? I have some ideas about dealing with the grants and whatnot. But let's first recognize that many of the evils we are dealing with today are not simply the cause of bad ideas. They're often caused by bad ideas or ideas that haven't fully been thought through or tested. That's true. But they become really problematic because we love throwing money at them. You want an electric vehicle? You want the government to give you money to subsidize it because it's too expensive, you can't afford it, but we'll get the government to bribe you to buy an electric vehicle by paying for part of it. We've seen it before. We saw it with ethanol, right? We had the ethanol subsidies. We have today with farm subsidies, right? We want to keep the farmers happy, so we'll throw money at them to not grow crops or only grow certain crops so that their prices remain high so that they can get their money. But to do that, they're getting money from the American people. And then we have scenarios where, oh, guess what? We have a bad year this year and the wheat harvest is down or the corn harvest is down. And everyone freaks out because we are become dependent on these crops because that's what we subsidize. Rather than letting the market say, what is the value of wheat? What is the value of corn? We let the government throw money at it to try to manipulate all that. These are some of the evils. Now, some of the evils, they really should be expected. I mean, you would think that a child of the age of 3 would figure out that if you keep throwing your toys in the trash, or not in the trash, if you keep throwing your toys away, you're going to have fewer toys. For example, we've been sending all sorts of armaments to Ukraine. By the way, we also have been using some of these armaments to defend against the Houthi attacks that we've seen over the last several years. And I understand the defense is a good thing. I like defending the homeland. I like defending the American people. So when the Navy comes around and asks for almost $93 million beyond what the Biden administration budgeted in order to, by the way, rebuild or to make up for the missiles that they've spent defending against Houthi attacks, that shouldn't really be a surprise. Now, I did a quick search on the internet, and I found that a standard missile, number 2, a standard missile 2, depending on which variant, apparently costs between $2 and $4 million. I wonder how much the weapons the Houthis are using to attack, how much do they cost? Now, don't get me wrong, right? Human life is valuable. Our trade is valuable. And we're dealing with an attack on our on our way of life. I want to defend ourselves. The question is, has the Navy become so dependent on these expensive, fancy missiles that they no longer have a more efficient way of dealing with the problem other than throwing millions of dollars of missiles at them? I don't know. I'm not an expert in this. I haven't followed any of this stuff for years. So if there's someone out there that says, yeah, that can tell me, is it financially effective or not? What is the cost of what the Houthis are shooting at us? What's the cost of these missiles that we're shooting back? And are we actually effectively using this money? Are we throwing, Ferraris at a problem that really needs maybe a nice little subcompact to do the job? I don't know. I have to take another break. Before I go, though, if you're interested in the military, if you're interested maybe what happened to General Flynn, he has a movie coming out shortly. You can find out more at constitutionstudy.com/Flynn movie, FLYNNMOVIE. You can buy tickets. You can sign for the live events, the streaming event, maybe pre-order a DVD. If you would do so through that link, I'd appreciate it because, well, it helps Mr. Flynn, General Flynn, know that the Constitution Studies out there supporting him, and it would help us as well. Now, listen, just as missiles are there to defend us against a physical attack, well, sometimes your body needs some help so that your immune system can deal with a germ attack or anything that will make you sick. Now, there's a lot of products out there on the market. I've been using Immune Super Boost when I need that extra help. It includes over a dozen immune supplements and an easy-to-use travel-ready gel pack. I use them mostly when I'm on the road. I throw them in my bag. I take one a day, and it works. I haven't gotten sick in months, years now. You can find out more at AmericaOutloud.shop, but please go there and check out that ad because doing so, you can get 25% off your first order from Healthy Cell. So again, go to AmericaOutloud.shop, find the ad for Immune Super Boost or any of the Healthy Cell products and give them a try. But be sure to use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud. 58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're looking at the root of all kinds of evil. That's right. Our love of money, especially other people's money, and then using it for what we think is a good idea. One of the classic examples of this has to be our education system. As the United States has spent more and more per pupil on education, it seems our test scores have gotten worse and worse in relation to other nations in the industrialized world. Now, throwing money at a problem isn't always the best thing. I have several friends that they do missionary work overseas. And what I find most interesting is they tell me that when whether it be the United States or aid organizations or churches, when they simply send us money, when they send money to these countries to deal with problems, it rarely helps. And when they send food through the government programs, it rarely helps. He said, but you send a fraction of that money toward the actual people doing the work on the ground, it makes things better. Kind of like, you know, how charter schools that cost less but tend to have better outcomes for their students, even though they're still public schools. One example I saw, I forget what country it was in. I think it was one of the African countries. And the solution to a famine or something like that was for the United States to send tons and tons and tons and tons of rice. Sound like a good plan, except for one little thing. See, all that free rice meant that the rice farmers were put out of business. So we have to be careful when simply throwing money at a problem doesn't necessarily make it better. In fact, sometimes it can even make it worse. Case in point, for the last 17 years, multiple federal agencies have been throwing money at Washington State's homeless problem. According to some records, $200 million have been sent to Washington State, again, by HUD, by the VA, by HHS, and others, for 17 years, all the way back to 2007, to deal with Washington State's homeless problem. There's just one problem. See, during that time, Washington State's homeless population grew by 20%. So while they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars to alleviate homelessness has actually grown. And again, I think part of the problem is believing that money solves problems. Now, money may fund solutions to problems, but money itself does not solve problems. Perfect example. The VA has spent roughly $120 million. They've given it to these third-party organizations to assist homeless veterans. Again, starting all the way back in 2007. But according to records, even with all this cash, Washington has the fifth highest rate of veterans experiencing homelessness. So the VA spent money to deal with veterans that are homeless, and they ended up with more veterans that are homeless. Now, there's a couple ways I think things we need to look at. The question you need to answer before you do anything is why. Why are these people homeless? Problem number one. See, different people will be homeless for different reasons. We like to put everything into one big bundle, and you know, the veterans are homeless because there's not affordable housing, or because they have a PTSD or other issues. The problem is people are individuals. You know, it's interesting. One of the reasons why taking care of people is not a power delegated to the United States. Now, you could argue that veterans, because they served in the U.S. military, the U.S. government does have some responsibility for their care if it was caused or impacted by their service. I understand that. But the question is, why? One individual, maybe they have an alcohol or drug problem. One maybe has a mental problem that needs to be dealt with. One maybe has a financial problem. Not simply there's not affordable housing, but they've never learned how to handle money properly. The problem is if the answer is, well, we'll just throw money at a monolithic solution when there's not a monolithic problem, you actually make the problem worse. Imagine you're one possibility, right? You have a homeless vet, and a program comes along and says, hey, you're homeless. We will give you money to shelter. We're going to help you. We're going to support you. We're going to give you money to get a shelter. Well, that means as soon as they get a shelter, the money's going to be turned off, isn't it? Which means you're actually incentivizing them to remain homeless because you're paying them to be homeless. And since the money is coming from Washington, D.C., the other side of the country, do you really think the people are checking on how this money is being used? I'm not saying that's the root of the problem. I'm not even saying that's the majority of the problem. I'm saying that's a possibility that really should be considered. You should also consider the fact that how many of these third-party organizations, well, they're taking a cut off the top, aren't they? They're going to be paid for their services, so there's an extra expense in there. And let's face it, if the veteran that is getting this money, instead of having to use it for, say, what the government thinks they're going to use it for, they actually decide to use it for drugs and alcohol, you're dealing with the problem. I guess my point is, there are a lot of problems that are a lot more complicated than we really want to admit. We want a quick, clean, easy solution. Stroke a check, clear our conscience, and walk away. The problem is you're dealing with people. And people are complicated. And people are unique. They have unique problems. And it's going to be impossible for a government 3,000 miles away with no direct impact with an individual to help that person. But we see we throw money at it and we feel better. See, we spent $120 million on homeless veterans. Did it do any good? No, but we spent the money, so we feel better. Sometimes the love of money is the love of what money makes it look like we're doing. You know, like the person that they give to some organization and hope that that organization does good. I'm use an example. When I was in corporate America, there was one time they were pushing us to support, I won't name it, one of these organizations is kind of like, you know, a blanket charity. They collect money and then dole it out to other charities. And it was a big deal in this company. They really wanted the employees to give to that organization. I refused to. It was difficult. I kept getting pressured to, but I refused to because I have no idea where they are sending the money I donated to them. Now, that doesn't mean I don't donate. I believe in giving money. And I gave a significant percentage of my pay to organizations, but I gave them to organizations that I was in contact with, where I was getting the annual report saying, here's the money we took in, here's what we spent it on, here's the outcomes that we found. Agencies that would invite me to come see how good they're doing. That's what I wanted. I wanted a more personal in touch because I think that was a better solution. Now, sometimes money is not used in an attempt to acquire the imprimatur of charity. Sometimes it's basically just used to, to influence everything from the school board to the elections. How many of you remember Zuckerbucks? You remember when Mark Zuckerberg and his wife donated hundreds of millions of dollars to fund the administration of elections? They gave money to, again, county election boards and others, often with the goal of increasing registration, targeted suspiciously at Democratic leading districts and precincts. Now, of course, this came out and there was a small dust up, and I really don't think people paid that much attention to it. Well, except possibly in Wisconsin. We have to see. See, there's an election. In fact, it's supposed to be today in Wisconsin. And on that, in that election, along with, you know, primaries and whatnot, there are questions to an attempt to amend the Constitution of Wisconsin. There are actually two of them, and they're both important. So the first one says, shall Section 7, Section 7-1 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that private donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expanded, expended or used in connection with the conduct of any primary election or referendum. The second is, shall Section 7-2 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums? So there are two questions. And question number one is, hey, will we, by constitutional amendment, prevent the county officials from applying for, accepting, or using private money to conduct elections, any election, primary, general, referendum, whatever? And the second will be, set it up so that only election officials have the ability to conduct primaries and elections and any of the tasks involved, right? So you can't have hire a third person to come in and maybe oversee the ballots or any of those. And these are interesting. They're interesting things. And part of the concern, I believe, is because this is primarily a primary election, they may not have the turnout. And because of the way these amendments are set up, the fact that you have to vote yes on both of, well, that if you want to prevent Zuckerbucks 2.0, really you should be involved in, you need to vote on both of them. So let's not allow private money from being used to run the elections, and let's not allow private individuals from performing the tasks in the elections. Again, this is a response to a pain that Wisconsin felt from the accepting of private money as part of the election process, funding the election officials with, of course, along with the money comes influence, right? He who pays the piper calls the tune. That love of money to do these things, well, it caused harm and sorrows in Wisconsin, and they want to stop it. And they believe the best way to do that is via a constitutional amendment, which, again, is on the ballot today, April 2nd. If you're listening via podcast, sorry you missed it, but I think it's an important thing to consider. And do we want private organizations buying influence in how we conduct our elections? So let's go back to the original statement, right? The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and because of that, because of their lack of faith, their greediness, we've hurt ourselves. And as much as we all like to point at somebody else, you point the politician, you point at Mark Zuckerberg, it's we the people. We're the greedy ones. See, we're the ones that say, yeah, give us those cheap student loans. Give us affordable health care. Give us money to deal with our charity, because we want the money to do it. As de Tocqueville said, the Republic will survive until Congress realizes it can bribe the public with the public's money. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a lesson they have learned quite well. And we are suffering for it. We have been pierced through with many sorrows because of our greed and our desire to have without actually paying for it. And I admit, I'm as guilty as everyone else. There were times in my life when I would do that, but I'm weaning myself off of it as fast as I can. As I mentioned, I've had a college student, a young lady, volunteer to be an intern here, and we're trying it out. And when I asked her her skills, one of the things she mentioned was writing grants, and I refused to take grants. I'm not going to take government money to buy influence over the Constitution study. That means I'm kind of dependent on you, on those of you who support me directly by going to the website, constitutionstudy.com, and either buying merchandise or donating to the cause. I'm dependent on you. I'm dependent on those of you who go to our partners like Patriot Mobile or the Flynn Movie or others I hope to bring online. When you purchase their products through our links, we get a commission on that. And that helps keep this up and running. That helps keep the Constitution Study coming to you week in, week out, 5 days a week. So let me ask you a question. Which would you prefer? Would you prefer a Constitution Study that's dependent on government funding, private funding, other people that are that want to have influence over what the Constitution says, Constitution Study says, and what we do? Or would you rather support me yourself to, again, donate? And again, if you're working with one of our partners and that helps us, you get a product that you like and use and they help us in the process, to me seems to be a win-win. But the choice is yours. Which would you prefer? Somebody influencing the Constitution Study? Or you helping us do what we do without that third-party influence? Whichever one you prefer, I hope you come back and join us every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen via podcast through your favorite podcast app, but the episodes come out a day or two after they're heard on the radio, on talk radio. Find all the links you need at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.news. But please, this information I think is important. It's why I've dedicated so much of my life to it these last few years. But I can't do it alone. I need you to help me. I need you to help share the blessings of liberty by sharing the links and the information that you find here.